Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The movie theater business is changing, and Central Ohio is changing with it, as usual. A few years ago, a demise appeared unavoidable. It was sort of sad. But now we have the Grandview Theater, which reopened in December, the Drexel Theater, of course, in Bexley, the Wexner Center for the Arts on the OSU campus, and its new collaborator, I guess, for lack of a better word right now, is the Gateway Film Center, right across the street almost. Joining us today to talk about that is Wexner Center film and video curator David Philippi. David, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And his assistant film curator, Chris Stoltz. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Joining us later will be Drexel Theater owner Jeff Frank and also Grandview Theater owner David Nedrow. We look forward to hearing from them about half past. In the meantime, we can just talk generally about the Wexner. It's been 20 years now. How have things changed the most over 20 years? It's sort of an iconic number.
Well, I think there's a few changes. We definitely do more programming now than we did, say, 15 years ago.
Meaning retrospectives?
More titles. More retrospectives, just a heavier volume of overall programming. And I think, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, we tried to – I don't know if ambitious is the right word, but we tried to start in – getting directors that were, you know, a little bit more well-known and just people like Jim Jarmusch and Richard Linklater, Gus Van Sant, and doing retrospectives, both because, you know, they're great filmmakers, but also with the thought that if we start to invite more people like that, maybe they'll check out, you know, some of our experimental film offerings or, you know, documentaries that might be less well-known or foreign films that might be less well-known. So I think we've just everything has increased in volume, I think. That's, I'd say, one of the bigger changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think now better than ever we show just the range of films that are being made both today and throughout film history. So we really try and represent, you know, documentaries, indie films, classic studio films, you know, experimental offerings or new video works. Just every type of film that's being made and that's noteworthy, you know, we try and focus on throughout the course of the year. Some months might have more of a heavier focus towards classic films than another, but over the course of a year, there's just this great range of offerings being available. We like to say it's kind of like a film festival all year round. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing that's really missing in Columbus is a big film festival. But thankfully, we're able to bring in a lot of the films that travel the film festival circuit, and people can see them at the Wexner Center.
When you're planning the year, how far in advance do you plan? Is it a constant?
It's weird.
Like it is for me, it's just a constant process.
I mean, sometimes, you know, like when we're getting close to deadline, some things are planned, you know, even days and weeks, not weeks, but a week or so after a deadline. And then other things, you just know, you know, maybe 6 months in advance, that would be a good time to do this, and you kind of start working on it. When you're dealing with filmmakers, it's hard because a lot of times, you know, a director doesn't know what their schedule is going to be like, mm-hmm. you know, 8 months or a year from now. And so a lot of those things have to be planned a little bit with more short term when they know they're either not going to be working on a project or they're going to be in a phase of a project where they're going to be able to travel to Columbus. But it kind of varies. It's just –
And that's kind of a related point to that is a lot of people – we usually bring in directors, sometimes producers or cinematographers, and people ask sometimes, well, why don't you bring in more actors or whatever? And that's even trickier to plan scheduling-wise because just jobs appear at a moment's notice, and it's so hard for them to plan far ahead unless they're going on a specific promotional tour for a film. So – yeah, we do primarily stick to directors because their schedules are a little more in place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would imagine their perspective is different too. They have that overall perspective of the art of the film and what went into it. And
sure. I mean, they're kind of overseeing the chaos of a film production, you know, and depending on the actor or actress, you know, some of them would have a great perspective on the art of filmmaking and others maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. But we've had, you know, we had, it was a long time ago now, but Jean Moreau, the great French actress, was here mm-hmm. about 15 years ago. And, you know, obviously it's just, she's lived through so much film history. Right. It was just fascinating to sit and listen to her. But someday we'll get some more actors and actresses.
Yeah.
How has the audience changed in 20 years? Do you feel an impact?
It's definitely grown, like we were talking about before the start
just
of the show.
In numbers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. At the start of the decade, we recently looked back over the past decade of what we've been doing. And by the decade's end, we were averaging about 5,000 more people a year than at the start of the decade. So I think, yeah, there's more, you know, both awareness of the Wexner Center and also there's just kind of fewer really good the quantity of foreign films getting wide distribution is a lot smaller than it used to be. So the audience that, you know, used to have a lot of options for seeing foreign or really great indie films, there aren't quite as many. So, you know, once mainstream offerings start drying up, then people are still interested in going to great films. So, you know, the offerings that we have or some of the other theaters around town, you know, really that's where you have to go to if you want to see a film for adults.
When you mean the distribution is drying up, that they're just not as many being made or that they're not being spread out and they're just not coming to Columbus, it's harder to get them.
I'd say there's certainly as many being made. Yeah. It's just there's fewer that get wide distribution. You know, the Drexel brings in a few foreign films over the course of the year, and I'm sure David at the Grandview Theater will do some as well. He's showing a French film right now. Mm-hmm. But then at AMC and Linux, you know, there might be like two that they show over the course of a year. The Gateway will show some. So there's just few choices, you know, going to a commercial theater.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Going back to one, the way I think our audience has changed, I think Columbus has changed so much in the last 20 years. I moved here about 15 years ago, and just as a point of comparison, if you think about the restaurants that are around now that were not around, say, you know, 15 years ago, I think Columbus, just with different people moving here and more people moving here and the university obviously being a magnet for people from all over the country and all over the world, I think the stakes are just higher in, you know, things like restaurants and the arts and things like that. And it's very common for someone to come up at the end of a film or before a film and just say, you know, I moved here from wherever and I'm so thankful that the Wexner Center is here. This is so great. And that's one change I've really noticed is just more new people, it seems like, coming to Columbus. And just all across the city, things seem to be kind of improving in the cultural realm, I guess.
Yeah, I moved here just about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I've had the Wexner, you know, in all of its glory for mm-hmm. most of that time. Right. And I guess that spoils you, you know, a little bit. If you're just joining us, my guest today, Dave Phillippe, he is the film curator at the Wexner Center for the Arts, and assistant film curator Chris Stoltz. Joining us in a little while, Jeff Frank from the Drexel Theater, and then also David Nedrow from the Grandview Theater. How do you coordinate what you do? Or I don't know if you – I'm sure you guys don't get in a room and plan it all out. But when you think about the Grandview and the Drexel out there and what can you bring, how much is kind of creating a niche that's special to, and of course now the Gateway, I keep forgetting that, the Gateway Film Center. How important is it to create that niche?
For the most part, the films that we are interested in showing don't really overlap that much with the other venues in town. There are certainly, you know, maybe a handful of films every year that we're interested in showing that maybe, you know, typically when we show a new film, we can only show it once, twice, three times, something like that. And obviously, if a distributor can get a week run or 2 week run or something that's more attractive to them. So occasionally we will lose out on a film that we're interested in. But now with our relationship with the Gateway, that's going to alleviate that problem to a great extent. So we're going to be able to offer runs. But you know, I think we just naturally kind of have a niche just because of what we can do. And a lot of the things that we do, like say a big, you know, 12 film retrospective or something like that, you know, that's not very – that has like zero commercial potential. Even if it does pretty well, just the – especially if say the prints are coming from overseas or something like that, the expense involved in putting on something like that – a for-profit theater just is not able to put something like that on. It would it'd just be impossible. So, and you know how we make our decisions. I think people would be shocked how unscientific it is. You know, it's just we have a number of people in our department. Chris and I do most of the program, and it's, you know, really, I'd say it's a combination of what we're interested in just as people that love movies and then what we think, you know, kind of deserves to be shown in Columbus because somebody will really be interested in it. And I think we kind of program, I don't know, so I'm speaking for Chris, but we kind of program for ourselves, like what would we want to see, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that goes or helps.
Well, and like I said earlier, we try and show a range and have a balance over the course of the year where we show a generous helping of every type of film out there. And then the audience, you know, to some extent does determine what we show. We always have the audience in mind as much as, you know, we program things that we're interested in. Like I think 5 years ago we did a program in January called New Argentine Cinema because mm-hmm. there were so many great films coming out of Argentina. And it did – some of the screenings, you know, sold out. It did so much better than our expectations. So we realized that, you know, there's clearly an audience for this. So we started a series that we do every January. We're doing it right now called Cinema Latino, where we show, you know, films from Spanish-speaking countries from South and Central America. And it's proven to be a very popular event every year.
And it's also kind of our acknowledgement of the, you know, the increase in the Spanish-speaking population in Columbus. Mm-hmm. You know, we're reaching out to that audience. You know, it's kind of a very calculated effort on our part in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing about places like the Wexner Center around the country, how the programs slightly are different as they work for their constituencies. Like in Cleveland, they show lots of, say, Polish or Eastern European films that there would be almost no audience for in Columbus. But they do – like I'll talk to the guy who programs up there and he's like, yeah, we showed an Estonian film and, you know, had a packed house in Columbus. That film, you know, there might be a dozen people or something. But then there's things we could show here that there wouldn't be an audience for in another city necessarily.
Yeah. Iranian films have traditionally been very, very popular for us. We brought in many Iranian directors and – kind of are always on our – or have our eyes open for new Iranian films. And we've had a great relationship with the Iranian community in Columbus, Iranian-American community in Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back with some – maybe some clips. My guest from Wexner Center for the Arts is Dave Phillippe. He's film curator there, and also Chris Stoltz. He's assistant film curator. Coming up, Jeff Frank from the Drexel Theater and David Nedro from the Grandview Theater. If you have some questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, we always welcome that. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook, coming up on the next On Point, CEOs of bailed out banks testify in Washington on the roots of the financial crisis as they get set to hand out billions in bonuses. We'll weigh the testimony. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 28 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 40 degrees. A few clouds this evening and more clouds overnight bring a chance of drizzle, maybe a little freezing drizzle after midnight, and a low of 31.
Support for WOSU comes from Thurber House, presenting evenings with author's guest Jane Annie Phillips, reading her latest novel, Lark and Termite, Tuesday, January 19th at the Columbus Performing Arts Center. Tickets at thurberhouse.org.
All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the film business in Columbus, specifically at Wexner Center for the Arts. And also we'll be talking about the Drexel and the Grandview. The movie theater business changes in all the time. And in Central Ohio, it has changed much in the last 20 years. I'm wondering what's coming up this weekend at the Wexner now that people can
This weekend, it's going to be, you know, one of the most exciting events that we're putting on this year. The filmmaker Peter Bogdanovich is going to be here on Saturday night. We're doing a very, very small retrospective of his work, showing Paper Moon and Last Picture Show on Friday night, and then his first feature film, Targets, at 4:30 for free on Saturday. And then he'll be here to introduce his great tribute to screwball comedies, What's Up, Doc, at 7 o'clock on Saturday night.
Okay, and that's sold out, but we're going to have a clip from that now. It's a clip. It's with Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal, and in this clip, Barbara is in Ryan O'Neal's bathtub, and he's a little bit upset to find her there. Listen to that now.
I believe you dropped something.
What do you think you're doing?
I think I'm taking a bath, aren't I?
If you're not out of here, in 2 minutes, I'm calling the police.
Who do you think they'll arrest, the girl in the tub or the guy with his pants down?
I am not joking now. I do not like to act rashly, but you are the last straw that breaks my camel's back. You are the plague. You bring havoc and chaos to everyone, but why to me? Why me? Why? Why?
Because you look cute in your pajamas, Steve.
Get out!
Right now?
Yes! No! Wait a minute!
Are you all right?
Oh.
Okay, that is a screwball comedy.
Yeah, that's a great clip.
I know. Thank you, Amy Jurevich, for a good pick there. Why Peter Bogdanovich? Why now?
Well, it's one of those opportunities that he was available. Mm-hmm. And he's just such a fascinating figure. The best point of comparison is someone like, you know, Truffaut in France, someone who just loved movies as a kid, started to write about movies. Bogdanovich curated films, and then he just kind of gradually his love of film and knowledge of film history kind of morphed into this filmmaking career. And he's – even if he had never made a single film, he would be worth bringing in. He's written so much about film history. His two large volumes of interviews, one is called Who the Devil Made It, and then the other is Who the Devil's In It, one about directors and one about actors and actresses. And he's just a fascinating person. And the second thing is he was part of this – one of the richest periods in American film history, the late 60s mm-hmm. through most of the 70s, where you had these films, you know, like Chinatown and The French Connection and The Godfather and, you know, all these films that were incredibly popular but also very artistic. You know, the same films made today would be considered, you know, maybe risky films or independent films or what have you. And, you know, the films he made, Last Picture Show, What's Up, Doc, Paper Moon, you know, on and on. That's one of the things I'm most interested in talking with him about is just being a part of that movement, what it was like to have that kind of directorial freedom compared to what directors are saddled with today.
And those were huge box office hits time, whereas now they'd be kind of, you know, marginal releases.
Why do you think? Is it because of the technology of filmmaking? It's changed. We got the avatars and all that kind of thing, or?
Well, most people just say Jaws, Star Wars, and, you know, the blockbuster mentality of mm-hmm. the studios and
marketing campaigns.
Everything. And, yeah. It's if you have to spend more than a sentence explaining what a movie is about, that's too much for most of the studio marketing departments now, as well as a lot of critics now. So those types of films in a way are still being made. But like Chris just said, you know, they're more marginal now. They're considered independent films or, you know, maybe instead of having, you know, say when Chinatown came out, that was a huge studio film. You know,
right.
it received the kind of campaign of God, there's almost no comparison to it today. Like maybe a Julia Roberts, Hugh Grant comedy would receive today or something like that. And it was popular and it was, you know, it was by Roman Polanski, you know. That's a whole other show.
Yeah, that's a whole other story.
Getting back to Bogdanovich, one other thing that's interesting about Bogdanovich is he started off training as an actor, actor studio.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so he does have this other life as an actor sometimes in his films, but a lot of people might know him as – Dr. Melfi's doctor from The Sopranos. He was the therapist to the therapist character in The Sopranos. So he does have a recognizable presence to a certain segment of the audience, you know, not even as a filmmaker or as this, you know, link to old Hollywood, but he's just, you know, somebody, one of the great characters on The Sopranos.
Tell us about the Gateway Film Center now and how that works with Drexel, Chris.
Sure. Yeah, the Gateway Film Center, it's been around several years now, but it just now has new ownership, and it's owned by some or it's run by some local film buffs who are really excited about making this a vibrant part of, you know, Columbus's film culture. And since it is right down the road from the Wexner Center, if nobody's been there, it's a little bit south of the Wexner Center on High Street, the Gateway area near Eddie George. And there's an 8-screen theater. And the Wexner Center, as part of a program we're calling Wexit Gateway, is running two of the screens there at the Gateway Center. So our plan is to open a new film every week, have it run for 2 weeks, and just kind of have a regular schedule where we're opening a new film there. And still, if you look at like film magazines, the biggest film magazines like Film Comment or Sight and Sound, just so many of the films being talked about in those magazines don't come to Columbus. Or if you look at the best reviewed movies of 2009, a lot of those didn't play in town for one reason or another. So at the Gateway, we hope to be able to bring a lot of these films that people might be reading about, but, you know, reading about in like a New York,
right,
you know, Times review. And now, you know, it'll finally have a chance to show in Columbus.
A film like The Horse Boy.
The Horse Boy, yeah,
for
showing
example,
there right now.
We're gonna listen to a portion of the trailer in a second. But could you tell us what this movie's about?
Sure. The Horse Boy is a documentary about a Texas couple, and they have an autistic son, and they notice that he responds really well to horses. He just seems more alert and engaged whenever he's around horses. And the father, I don't remember the specifics, but I think he might be a travel writer. But he's well traveled, and he's been to Mongolia and knows what a big part horses are in their culture. And he's always been fascinated by shamans and healers in Mongolia. So he gets this kind of crazy idea for him and his wife to go to Mongolia and take their autistic son there. And it's one of the interesting things about the film is how it's kind of half this travel adventure story of this family, you know, that even a trip to the grocery store might be something of a challenge, and they're traveling through Mongolia. And then it's also just about dealing with autism and something that's, you know, obviously a huge issue to a lot of people right now. So it's kind of those two stories combined together in a really interesting way.
Okay, let's listen to this now.
In April 2004, my son Rowan was diagnosed with autism. The feeling was like being hit across the face with a baseball bat. Our lives became clogged under a mountain of conflicting information on the disorder. We tried everything. He didn't speak to us. One day, he ran away from me and ran right up to a horse called Betsy. The moment I put Rowan on Betsy's back, he began to speak.
He's a nice horse.
As Rowan began to open up to me for the first time, a light bulb went on in my head. Was there a place on Earth that combined healing with horses? Mongolia. This is a story about how, as a family, we did something crazy. How we ended up going halfway across the world in search of a miracle.
Okay, that's a portion of the trailer for The Horse Boy. It's showing at the Wex at Gateway Film Center for another week.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. The kid's name is Rohan.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the horsemen, the tribe or whatever, they're called the Rohan.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe. That's kind of interesting.
He's a Tolkien fan.
Yeah, he might be a Tolkien fan, exactly. Is that a true story?
Yes, it's a documentary.
Documentary. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. That was not clear to me. Boy, that's – how do you figure out what's going to work at Gateway versus what works at the Wexner?
A lot of times it might be the same film. Like The Horse Boy, we would have shown at the Wexner Center. But in the past, we'd only be able to show it maybe on a Friday and Saturday night. And that's a film that certainly has – you know, a potentially a much larger audience that would be interested in it. So it's great that we can show it at the Gateway, where it can show for 2 weeks, several shows a day, you know, have more of a chance to find an audience.
And our relationship is exactly a week old too, so we're still sorting some of those things out.
So. No anniversaries yet in sight, but how did even the idea for that come up?
Before the management was even in place, we had some conversations with essentially the landlords, and they were just, I think, exploring different ways to give it a local identity. I think they recognized that, you know, we have a bit of a track record now, and that we might be able to move some of the audience that follows our film department down there. And you know, and it's on campus, so just it's across the street from campus, and it's definitely a campus development. And I think they just thought that connection would be kind of natural, and it just, you know, the conversations went well, and here we are.
Funny how things happen. joining us now on the phone, Jeff Frank, owner of Drexel Theater. Jeff, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning.
And also
nice to be here.
David Nedro from the Grandview Theater. David, thank you very much
for
joining us. Speaking of, you know, fixtures in the community, that's why we're so glad you could join us, because you both, David, you just renovated the Grandview, and Jeff, you've endured, you're a survivor, you're an institution.
It's kind of fun to be here with everybody, but David from the Wexner Center is a former Drexel employee, so I kind of feel like maybe the grandfather here of the specialized film exhibition in Columbus. But it's great to have, you know, everybody, you know, out there showing, bringing fabulous films to Columbus. I mean, it's really become a mecca now with all the various venues that are available for, and films that haven't been coming to Columbus, people are going to get a chance to see.
Yeah, I mean, maybe was it 10 years ago? Things look sort of bleak.
I don't think they look. I think we're
maybe to an outsider.
Maybe 25 years ago or 20 years ago. I mean, I can remember before, you know, we've been running the Drexel now for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, there was just a one night a week film society. It was almost the only place you could see independent and foreign films. And boy, we've gone a long way since then. And, you know, there's, you know, and any given weekend now in Columbus, you might have 4 to 6 independent films opening up, and that we're right up there with Chicago and, you know, rivaling Los Angeles and New York for the number of films opening on any given weekend.
And it really is sort of the more the merrier kind of a thing. The more you can show people, the more people will see and the more people will come. And
well, you have to take things in perspective. I think that the fact that, you know, 95% of the people who go to movies right now or go to movies in Columbus go to major big commercial theaters and see major Hollywood studio product. That's just the facts of life. The fact that these films are getting out there and there's an audience building, I think it's a great thing.
I think Jeff and David would both agree with this. One thing that has really changed a lot over, say, the last 10, 15 years is the level of the film coverage. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, a lot of these films would have had reviews by a local writer. They would have a lot higher word count. There were more independent papers, and some of the papers that still exist now don't have kind of the independent spirit that they had back then. And so, like Jeff mentioned, you know, there might be a weekend where, say, 4 or 5 independent films are opening, and there just aren't the critics putting them in the proper perspective, you know, telling people why these films are important. If anything is keeping the audience from increasing even more, I'd say that's, you know, issue number one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the media changes, and you know, I read somewhere there's a difference between, maybe in your mind, a media critic and a reviewer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some of the films that open, you can't. It's not sufficient to just say, here's what happens in the film and whether a person liked it or not. I mean, you have to maybe explain, you know, who the director is, why this film's important. You know, that, or and just, you know, I think the critics' enthusiasm, it's contagious. Mm-hmm. and you can attract people to come and see some of these films. And if the critic either doesn't know why the film is important or has no interest in seeing a film like that, you know, it's really hard to overcome a situation like that. And to me, that's the difference between a critic and a reviewer. A critic is putting it in perspective, has like a good knowledge of film history.
More of a scholarly knowledge.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We're going to listen now to a portion of the trailer from The Messenger that's showing at the Drexel right now. Jeff, and afterward, can you explain to us a little bit about what The Messenger is about?
Yeah, well, The Messenger is a film by a first-time filmmaker, and it's concerns two U.S. Army officers who are one is a Iraq veteran, and another one is sort of a lifer, and their job right now for the Army is to knock on doors and tell people that a loved one has either died in combat or died. And it's a really tough job, and they have to follow a certain protocol to do it and not get emotionally involved with the people. And it's a really fascinating look at how the Army does this. And Woody Harrelson is the star, and he is up for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor, and this is maybe his best performance of his career.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson is a senior officer, and in this clip he's going to be giving the new guy some guidance on how to do the job. We'll hear that now.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved.
Are you Mrs. Peterson?
How did it happen?
He was killed in action yesterday. That's all the information we have now, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. I know this can't be easy for you. Goodbye.
But now I have found I was blind.
We walk into these people's lives. We don't know anything.
Trust me, you don't want to know.
Okay, we're back. That is from The Messenger. It's showing at the Drexel.
Yeah, I have to say that the gentlemen that do this in, for the Army, who Woody Harrelson and Ben Foster in the movie portray, their job is to let people know before they hear it on the Internet, before, you know, with the speed of the way things get out today, the Army has to really get these guys out there quickly, and their job is not the council. The Army, the military has a whole separate division that helps people with their grief. These guys are just there to tell people so that they hear it from a service person first and not through some other means. And the movie is of course not just about knocking on doors, but the Ben Foster, who plays the Iraqi veteran who's a war hero, develops a relationship which he's not supposed to get into with one of the people that they knock on her door. Samantha Morton plays a wife who's lost her husband, and it's a very, very moving, powerful film, and it's kind of an upbeat film. You would think it'd be a real downer, but it's not.
Okay, I'll take your word for that before I watch
it.
Hard
to believe, but it is.
let's see. Also, David Nedrow, Grandview Theater. You're sort of the new guy in a way. You've just completed a big renovation of the theater in Grandview. Tell us about that.
Well, we came in, and the theater was originally opened in 26 as a silent movie theater, and some point in the past, they had kind of walled off part of the auditorium to create a concession lobby. And so that kind of created some technical problems over the years with sound leaking through into the auditorium, and also with just the age of the building, you know, the walls and stuff needed a lot of work. So we took the opportunity while it was closed to go ahead and do a lot of the work that just, you know, you wouldn't be able to shut down if you were operating theater to take the time to do it. And so the lobby's been completely redone, new concession stand. We're working in the auditorium now. There'll be we're actually getting the wall hangings and everything up here in the next couple of weeks. But if people come in, they can see some of the stencils that were on the walls from when the theater originally opened in 26. And then we've got some new equipment. In fact, I just carried in our DTS unit for some digital sound here, and so that's kind of where the renovations are.
Okay, questions, comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email now from Christopher. Can you ask if the Hurt Locker has come and gone, or if we can look forward to seeing it in Columbus? That's one of the...
like 6 months ago, I think.
Yeah, I think the Hurt Locker did open about five months ago, and then it came back about 2 weeks ago. And it could come back again. I think it is coming out on DVD in about a week, and that may be the best way to see it if you haven't seen it yet. It's you know, certainly going to be up for a lot of award, you know, both Golden Globes. It's been up, and it's going to, you know, the Oscars are certainly a front runner for Best Picture, and that may get it another run in Columbus. But it's been a tough movie to get people to see, as this is all films dealing with war right now because of what this country is involved with.
And along with what Jeff was saying, he kind of pointed out that the DVD's coming out. The windows from when the films are being released to when they're going on DVD are getting much shorter. So where, you know, it might have taken a few months to get a film into Columbus for one reason or another, the opportunity to do that rapidly closes off now. You know, so you have to try to bring things in earlier. I think it was David or Chris was, you know, mentioning we have a number of more screens now, but when you think about it, we've doubled the capacity, but that's still only six screens.
we're going to have to take a quick break, and I want to get back to that topic, including, you know, how Netflix and maybe the DVD business has affected affected your businesses. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
When there's a major event in the country, whether it be pleasant or unpleasant, I run to WOSU because I know that I'm going to get reliable information. The people of WOSU are an integral part of our community. They know what's going on in this city, and that's what makes WOSU specifically so important to Columbus. I'm David Neva, the Assistant Concertmaster for the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. WOSU is my source for comprehensive news and information.
And you're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides will be here, and we'll hear how President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's radio broadcasts and fireside chats made him a familiar presence in the homes of millions of ordinary Americans. That discussion begins at 11 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 29 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today. We're on our way to a high of 40 degrees. A few clouds tonight. There is a chance of rain, maybe a little freezing drizzle after midnight, a low of 31. Cloudy for Friday. There is a chance of rain, maybe a little freezing rain in the morning, and then a high of 40 degrees for Friday. Looking ahead to Saturday, partly sunny and a high of 41.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the movie business in Columbus, the alternative movie business, the art movie business. Joining me in the studio, Dave Phillippe. He's film curator for the Wexner Center for the Arts, and also Chris Stoltz. He's assistant film curator at Wexner. Jeff Frank from the Drexel Theater and David Nedrio from the Grandview Theater. The expansion of the screens in Columbus sort of flies in the face of the whole Netflix phenomenon and the DVD business. David, how does that affect what you do?
Actually, it's kind of funny because just recently, maybe a couple of months ago, the head of Netflix in an interview said that he still prefers to see movies in the theater. So I think a lot of people are like that. And there's the issue of they have to wait for a DVD to come out. And usually the word of mouth and the press and everything is now. So I think that still drives a lot of people to the theaters. And, you know, in some cases, the types of films that we show may not see a release for a year or more, or they may just not be carried by whoever that person's preferred video distributor is, you know, whoever they go to, whether it's Blockbuster or Netflix, though Netflix probably carries a little more than Blockbuster, but I think all in all, the types of films that we show kind of help drive the traffic initially into the theaters.
I think, well, every time a technology comes along that is not theater-based, like you know, when it was TV in the 50s and then videotape and then DVD, you know, everyone thinks it's the end. You know, people are going to stop going to movies, and it, and we're always proven wrong. And I mean, that said, you know, I don't own a theater for it, so it's easy for me to say this. But, you know, there's no doubt we're undergoing this major shift in how people, you know, watch movies. Like I'm holding up my phone right now, and I've watched movies on my phone. And, you know, the studios are going to continue to make millions and millions and millions of dollars on movies. And, you know, how it all shakes out and how people like Jeff and David, you know, are situated 10 years from now, that is definitely a great unknown. But as far as like the availability of movies, like high school kids can see foreign films three different ways now that they never would have been able to see, you know, a generation ago. And so there are so many ways to see movies now. But, you know, true. Yeah, it's I think people do like to go to the theater, and I think that's never going to go away. But
when I think in terms of larger film culture, Netflix is nothing but a great thing, because I hear from people who would rarely take a chance on going to a theater to see a foreign or independent film, and it just comes up in their Netflix queue, like, you might like this, and they take a chance on it in a way they wouldn't with a theatrical presentation. And then that kind of creates this curiosity, and, you know, people –
it whets the appetite a little bit, right?
It does create a new audience and just a larger, you know, awareness of film culture in people that it didn't, you know, even exist 10 years ago.
And then the other thing that can't be replicated at home is the communal experience.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which, yes.
Yeah.
Whether people realize it consciously or not is what they're seeking when they go to see a film, you know, in a theater partially. You know, especially if you're looking at, you know, a drama or a comedy, because – or really any film, because from a natural standpoint – people are emitting pheromones and everything, and people start feeding off of, you know, what's in the atmosphere, as well as, you know, when somebody's laughing next to you, you know, you might see a comedy you thought was outrageous in the theater, and you watch it at home and you're like, why did I laugh at that?
That's for sure.
That's very true.
I think one time I went to Studio 35 years ago and saw that it was The Shawshank Redemption and Dumb and Dumber. And remember how you have to go to see both of them, you know, if you want to see one of them because it gets sold up? And I thought, oh, how am I going to get through Dumb and Dumber? And I'm embarrassed. Here I am telling God knows how many people. I laugh.
There's no such thing as a guilty pleasure.
At the theater this weekend, I was sitting next to the one guy in the theater that laughed out loud at every, you know, funny thing. We all know that guy. Mm. So I'm wondering about how it changes, though. There's the atmosphere of the communal experience. But does the film actually change what you see in a big theater screen? Is that visually different in any kind of technical way than what you see on TV?
Well, one thing.
Even a big screen TV?
You know, when VHS started, well, when TV and VHS became an outlet for films, you know, studios consciously started making films that would look better on TV, more close-ups and things like that, you know, not...
The breaks. You can see breaks in the movies sometimes.
Yeah, and not certainly not every film, no. But I mean a lot of especially big, you know, more commercial studio films, they consciously started to do that. So a lot of – especially, you know, less artistic films definitely take that into account, you know, that more people are probably going to see this film on TV or on DVD or however as opposed to a screen. So that's one change anyway.
And yeah. I think George Lucas was just on NPR, and he said he feels that the small film as shown in theaters will be a thing of the past very soon, that movie theaters will just be for big, huge Avatar-like event films, and small films will be people will watch them on their phones and online and, you know, through Netflix and through, you know, I think all the movie companies want to figure out a way to, you know, have you buy the films directly from them and bypass movie theaters. That's, you know, that's happening right now with companies like IFC and Magnolia, so that are distributing films first to homes and secondary to theaters. So the question is, you know, will people decide, well, wait a minute, it's more fun to go to the movies. It's more fun to go have a night out. It's more fun to, you know, sit in a dark theater and enjoy a film up on a larger screen. And, you know, you're never going to put a 40 or 50 foot screen in your living room. It's not going to happen unless you have, you know, the few people that have a gigantic mansion out there. So the experience is better. I think the movie industry as a whole is one of the worst, you know, offenders of not promoting themselves very well. They're great at promoting movies, but not very good at promoting the movie-going experience. And that's something I think needs to change.
You know, if it comes to pass the way George Lucas predicted, which is awful sad and depressing.
Well, he also thought that Star Wars Episode One would be the best film ever made.
So. Yeah, I remember that. You got through it to find out what happened. yeah, good point. You know,
Certainly Star Wars is certainly the most profitable film, you know, collection of films ever made. So, you know, I don't know how, you know, the guy knows a lot. I mean, he just wrote a book about, you know, about how movies are made and funded and what and the top 100 movies of all time. So he's doing a lot of thinking about this.
And I think Jeff, I think Jeff is absolutely right, though, that, I mean, the trend is definitely, you know, to bigger films. And I don't think that's necessarily going to only be Avatar-like films, but it we are moving to the time where it's going to be, you know, only films that – because the more expensive a film is, the more a studio is going to spend on marketing it. You know, mm-hmm. people don't realize that, you know, most films are – it costs $60 million just for the marketing, you know. And so those are probably the films that are going to end up in, you know, places like multiplexes and whatnot. And Jeff's right. I mean, maybe more independent films will have to figure out different avenues.
The thing about it at all is that the movie studios always, you know, they think they know everything, and they think they have all the answers. And you know, they most of them almost went bankrupt about two years ago. And you know, they think they always know what the next big blockbuster is going to be. And then you have a film like Paranormal Activity made for probably made for about as much money as we all have in our wallets right now. And you have a film like The Hangover, which is, you know, a very low budget film. Both these films were huge hits in movie theaters. And they're not blockbusters. They became blockbusters, but they weren't considered. They're considered, you know, I mean, Paranormal Activity, which I haven't seen, but just unbelievable word of mouth. And word of mouth really is the key.
Well, it seems like every year there's, what do you call them, sleepers or whatever they're called. I mean, that surprise everybody. So why is there this insistence that they've got to go with the big, super expensive movies?
Well, because it's
economics.
If you're a studio executive and you walk in with a film that's going to cost $200 million to make, and it has George Clooney and Julia Roberts and Brad Pitt in it, that's easy to get made. If you walk into a studio, if you're a studio exec and say, I want to make this film for $30 million with these three people you've never heard of before, you're not going to get that film made. And I mean, I think that's, you know, just like talking about, you know, the thing about films like Paranormal Activity and The Hangover, you know, they're for younger people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody really knows how those kids find out about things. I mean, everyone's trying to figure out, like, how they think. And that's what Hollywood's always chasing. And that's when you see a surprise film like that, it's almost always a film that is aimed at, you know, teenagers.
Well, Twitter was – Paranormal Activity was just
right. Mm-hmm.
viral on Twitter for mm-hmm. a couple weeks there.
And the executives are going, what is this? And then they try to make, like, a, you know, a film made by grown-ups for that audience, and then it dies on the vine, you know, so.
Right. Or the sequels or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Sequels never seem to work.
Except for Saw.
Yeah, but you had a film like My Big, you know, you had a film a few years ago, My Big Fat Greek Wedding,
yeah.
which took off and it was for older people.
That's a good example, yeah.
Slumdog Millionaire in many yeah. ways. I mean, that film was passed by almost every studio. One distributor had it and they went out, you know, they basically closed up shop because they hadn't had a hit and they were losing money, so they just sold it off to somebody else and closed up, and then it became one of the biggest films of the year. So a lot of times, you know, there's no magic formula. There's nobody really knows, with, you know, maybe the exception being Jim Cameron and a couple of stars who just seem to always be able to pull in an audience. But other than that, it's always a crapshoot, and you never really know what's going to work. I think one of the most important things is that, you know, we all represent locally owned or locally run movie theaters here in this group, and I'd like to encourage more people to come out and support, you know, theaters that are owned locally or programmed locally rather than these big major plexes, which really, you know, don't have the local roots, don't really, you know, they're really more programmed and run like a big, you know, box store where we're, you know, when you walk into our theaters, we're, you know, we'll take suggestions. We'll get up and introduce movies. We'll, you know, like, for instance, we just showed Young Victoria at the Drexel, and we actually invited Queen Victoria and Prince Albert to come and have tea, and we had 150 people show up and have tea with the Queen, and you don't get that at a big megaplex in Columbus. And I'm sure the guy, you know, the Wexner does all sorts of special programming, and David, I'm sure we'll do more of the same. So we make it unique.
You know, just bringing, I brought my kid to 13-year-old to the Drexel to see Food Inc., and he was just astounded at the difference. He'd been there before, but he was much younger, I think, and just he just didn't even know there were things like that out there.
Didn't know there were theaters without long hallways
with slot machines, or not slot machines, but with video games and
video games,
and not a single employee to be seen.
Bart with one, yeah, exactly. If the price of popcorn could be adjusted, I know I'd go more often. Because if you're an addict, you know, it's a hard thing to do. David, have I asked you what's going on at Grandview this weekend?
This weekend we're showing, we're going to go ahead and hold over Paris for matinees. And then we're running Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus for a week. And then after that, I think we're bringing in Broken Embraces next week. And beyond that, still planning.
Okay. All right. We have an email right now from Bob. He says, 10 years ago, I lived in Akron. One night I saw Son of Sheik with an organist accompanying it. I walked first to the local restaurant, then walked to the theater, then to a local ice cream store that made its own, then walked home. I figured that I was reliving steps my grandmother might have taken 70 years earlier. Priceless. Email from a listener. What is the future of the 24-hour science fiction or horror movie marathons? Speaking of not promoting enough, these events are never really properly promoted here in Columbus. Thanks.
Oh boy. Well, we are. You know, I've been doing sci-fi marathons for 25 years, and the last three or four have sold out. So maybe we are guilty of not spending enough money to advertise it, because we sort of have a great following. But I think it's a reflection of the critical approach to films now and the amount of space. I mean, the newspapers don't have enough space because there's not as many ads for movies as there used to be. You know, there are very few radio stations in Columbus with film critics. It's much harder to hear about films. You have to really get on the internet and you have to work at it.
And yet it's expanding. So.
Yeah, that's frustrating to me when people, you know, will come up and say, how do you hear about this? And you're like, there's the web, there's Facebook, there's,
exactly.
You know, we do so much.
There's a lot of other ways. Yeah. You know,
I think probably everybody has this experience, but somehow somebody will even make it into your lobby past marquees and signs and ask what time the shows are.
We're out of time right now. Thanks, everybody, for joining me today on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.